and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor Brian Rogers speaks about the challenges facing the University of Alaska system and the importance of UAF's research and education mission. This talk was recorded at the Egan Center on February 9th and was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce as part of their Make It Monday luncheon series. And now, Chancellor Rogers.
Well, thanks, and it's a pleasure and an honor to be able to present to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce to talk a little bit about my university and where we're headed. 100 years ago, Alaska was a very different place. Less than 60,000 people lived here, spread out all over in small pockets around the state. And 1914, 1915 started gathering here in Anchorage. This photo from the APU archives of Ship Creek, later Knik, Anchorage, and then Anchorage. You celebrate your 100th anniversary this year. Things have changed a lot since that picture was taken in 1915. But Anchorage wasn't the only place that things were happening in 1915. In March of that year, Congress passed an act authorizing land for a college in Fairbanks. This picture, taken July 4th, 1915, shows Judge Wickersham laying the cornerstone for the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, which later became the University of Alaska. Now, here in Anchorage that same day, you had your first baseball game, the 4th of July baseball game. We had a cornerstone laying. But over that 100 years, the university has changed quite a bit. We built a building in Fairbanks. This was the first building. We opened the campus to students in 1922 with six students and six faculty members. And now, 100 years later, we have a university system with three accredited universities: University of Alaska Anchorage, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and University of Alaska Southeast. Between the three, 35,000 students attending on a full-time or part-time basis. UAF serves about 11,000 of those students with campuses in Fairbanks, Dillingham, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, and learning centers in Interior, throughout Interior and the Aleutians. Now, we think about each of these universities as a regional university, but each of the three also has a statewide mission. And if we look at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, we're spread throughout the state of Alaska because we operate the Cooperative Extension Service, which extends knowledge and our research throughout the state. We have the Marine Advisory Program, which is similar in many ways to the Cooperative Extension Service, extending our marine knowledge throughout the state. And we have research centers in the north, the Tulik Lake, in southeast, Juneau Fisheries in Kodiak, an oceanographic base in Seward. And so really, Fairbanks, University of Alaska Fairbanks, while it has that regional name in it, serves the whole state. And it's UAF's statewide reach that brings me here today. Now, clearly, those of you in the Anchorage business community can and should be supportive of our sister institution, the University of Alaska Anchorage, and that's where the primary allegiance can and should be for this business community, because UAA makes a huge difference here. But what I'd like to do today is to show you why you have a stake in UAF as well. And we work closely with our sister institutions. The collaboration between UAF and UAA in addressing the need to grow the number of engineers in Alaska has resulted in doubling the number of graduates that we see out of the two engineering schools, UAA and UAF. And we had a meeting a couple weeks ago. Tom Case and I went, and we met with the joint advisory committees for the UAA and UAF engineering schools, and you couldn't tell who was for which school. It was about how do we together work to address the needs to develop the state and ensure we have sufficient engineers. And so our two universities, Fairbanks and Anchorage, and our three, including Southeast, we work to collaborate. Now, there are appropriate places to compete. We're not going to collaborate on the hockey rink. Although maybe we'd do a little bit better this year if we did. Anchorage has beaten us twice already, and well on its way toward the Governor's Cup for the first time in a while. It's kind of one of our many challenges in Fairbanks. Our biggest challenge, though, is budgetary. And I want to talk a little bit about this. This is affecting, obviously, all three of the universities. As the Chancellor of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, I can talk about our challenge. I think all of us are familiar with this graph of what's happened to oil prices. And for a university system that gets a little bit over 40% of its revenue directly from the state of Alaska, when we see state revenue falling to this level, it has real impacts on what we do in programs and what we do in services. And really, it comes on the heels of a significant reduction, about a $15 million unallocated reduction to the university in the current fiscal year. We're looking at a little bit more next year, and absorbing our fixed costs and compensation costs on top of those that general fund reduction. So if we look throughout the University of Alaska system, we're looking at about $43 million in shortfall for the coming fiscal year. UAF a little bit more than half of that, and that's, again, a mix of revenue loss and cost increases that lead to that. And we don't know yet where the legislature will go, but given the general budget picture, we would anticipate that the governor's budget is probably a ceiling rather than a floor on the budget. And so when we look at that level, we have to think about people. Universities run between 60 and 70% of expenses are about people. That's who delivers the courses, that's who does the research, that's who serves the public, and that's who supports all three of those primary missions, educating people, teaching the classes, serving the public. And so ultimately, we know that this will impact people. When I look at UAS budget and we look at how many people are on the payroll this year compared with a year ago, we're down about 160 people on UAF payroll. About a third of those, the permanent year-round positions, and about two-thirds, temporary, part-time, and student positions. Now, that's not layoffs. We've had a total of only 16 layoffs in the last year. We've managed through attrition, and in fact, we've hired back seven of those 16 in the last year. So, but 160 fewer people receiving a paycheck. We would anticipate next year it'll be somewhere in the 200 to 250 fewer at UAF, comparable numbers elsewhere in the system. At the same time, we have to look at where do we strategically invest, because we assume we're going to come out of this. How many of you were here in 1986? And we're all still here. We know that Alaska can make it through tough times. We know that Alaskans are resilient. We know this university is resilient because we're still here and, in fact, stronger than we were in 1986. I think that's the good news, but that means you have to strategically reinvest for what you're going to be like after the decline. This looks at the entire University of Alaska system budget. On the left shows our revenue sources, 44% state funding, 16% federal funding, 14% tuition and fees, and everything else is 26%. That would include auxiliary services like housing, it would include ancillary sales, everything else we do. The right looks only at our unrestricted money, and that wouldn't include then the federal grants and contracts, split between the three universities and the system office. So of the three, UAF just a little bit bigger than UAA in terms of state and tuition support, UAS a lot smaller, and about 9% for the system office. So when you look at that number on the left, the 44% state funding, and you listen to Governor Walker talking about we may have to reduce state spending by up to 25% over the four-year period, that would come out of that 44% slice. So potentially we would see a 10% reduction in overall spending, a 25% reduction in state spending. Now, each of the universities has approached that in a slightly different way. At UAF, we're doing a special academic program review of 46 of our roughly 200 academic and vocational programs. And it's really a two-phase process. The first phase, we looked at what are our lowest enrollment programs, what are our lowest graduation rate programs, and what programs have we seen significant decline in enrollment. That's where we came up with the 46. Now we're asking the question, okay, given those, given that we have to make some reductions within that group, which ones are most critical to the future of the state of Alaska? Which ones are unique in Alaska or the world? Which ones have strong demand in the state of Alaska for graduates, even if we're not yet fulfilling that? And then what can we do to either improve the program, or what can we, should we eliminate the program? Should we keep the program? That's on the academic side. On the non-academic side then, we're reviewing all of the support programs. And our goal is that somewhere between 15 and 20% of our total reduction will come out of academic programs, the rest out of support programs. So we're looking at things like our animal care and farms. We operate three farms right now as part of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, one at Matsu, one in Fairbanks, and then the large animal research station also in Fairbanks. We're looking at how we do public information and marketing. Can we change the model we use that helps bring down that expense? Looking at things like our online programs. Are there different budget models that might allow us to squeeze more revenue out of that or to reduce our expenses? And all of those will go together to deal with what will be a challenging FY16, and we anticipate going forward into FY17 as well. The biggest part of the thing that I think distinguishes UAF is its role as a research institution in the state. We leverage state money, bringing in competitive grants and contracts. And while revenue has declined a little bit in the last couple of years, primarily due to federal budget circumstances, we still see a significant leverage opportunity. If we look at the three universities in terms of the research grants and contracts, that we compete nationally for research grants and contracts. And you see UAF a little bit over $100 million, UAA a little over $10 million, UAS a little less than $1 million. That's the playing field today, with the bulk of the competitive grants and contracts being federal funds. And so UAF is doing work throughout the Circumpolar North. We're very involved throughout the Arctic. We're one of the founding members of the University of the Arctic, a network of about 170 colleges, universities, and research stations. We bill ourselves as America's Arctic University. When we went and looked at trying to compare ourselves with other universities, we found that we actually were underselling ourselves. We're really the world's Arctic University, with more publications and more citations of those publications than any other institution in the world. University of Tromsø in Norway is in second place, and Colorado Boulder in third in that ranking. We also have research going on every continent. Not as much as in the far north, but we end up doing research just about everywhere. Again, this is primarily funded through federal grants and contracts. And we've been working together with UAA and UAS to build the research capacity in Alaska, because research is a great industry. It brings new dollars into the state. It adds to the state's knowledge. And so the EPSCoR, the experimental program to stimulate competitive research, a federal program. We're now in our third round of that program, working with UAA and UAS, currently doing work on water and fisheries and the interaction with humans with three test cases, one on the North Slope, one on the Kenai River, and one in Southeast Alaska. So important research from a state perspective done collaboratively by the three universities. Another example is the INBRI program. Scientists love these acronyms. It's taken me so long to learn them. This is the IDEA Network for Biomedical Research Excellence, an $18 million award. But this is, again, this is the fourth award we've had from the National Institutes of Health since 2001, with the three universities working together, linking university-based researchers and students from University of Alaska campuses in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau, really working on how do we develop the biomedical workforce for Alaska, and how do we build the ability to do research capacity. This is a federal program that requires collaboration between universities, and I think we've shown ourselves at being very successful at that. We also look at student-focused opportunities that we can work together. The BUILD grant is another National Institutes of Health grant, $24 million, with the goal of building minority participation, minority and rural participation in biomedical work. And so really designed for how do we get undergraduates more involved in biomedical careers. So we're working with Illisavik College in Barrow, working with UAS rural campuses, UAS's rural campuses, and this really, we were successful at this because of something that UAF copied from UAA. Many of you are familiar with the WAMI Medical Education Program. Alaska's medical school with the first 2 years, now 3 years here in Anchorage, completing at the University of Washington. When the Board of Regents asked us to look at veterinary medicine, we decided we couldn't afford a vet med program in Alaska. But what we did find out was we actually, working with Colorado State University, could stand up a new vet med program. We've actually accepted our first cohort into that program. They'll start this fall. And the presence of that program, which will be 2 years in Fairbanks and 2 years in at Colorado State, that led to the ability to get this grant. It's being done by the UAF Department of Veterinary Medicine and the biology program. Again, though, collaboration between universities, in this case UA Southeast and UA Fairbanks. Finally, the mining workforce grant, a five-year, $8 million project between UA Southeast, the Prince William Sound Community College, the UA Mining and Petroleum Training Service, which is run by the System Office, and UAF, really focused on how do we do mine training. We know that mining jobs are high-wage, skilled occupation, and having work from all three universities involved, I think, again, helps us deliver the workforce needs of the state. I'd like to mention one other research area, the Center for Alaska Native Health Research at UAF. We started in 2001. In the last 14 years, have received a total of $50 million in competitive grants, and really focused on rural and Alaska Native health projects. We've been working with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium on the Western Alaska Tribal Collaborative Health Study, looking at long-term health impacts of more than 4,000 Alaska Native peoples. But when I visited with NIH a couple of years ago in DC, they said, really, the kind of work that UAF's Kanner is doing is leading the nation in community-based participatory research, where the community helps design the research together with the researchers. So it's not the sort of researchers fly in, gather the data, fly away, and that's the end of it. But it's really, what does the community need to know? What do the researchers need to know? How do we design a research program that meets both of those needs? one that I hopefully is near and dear here in Anchorage, what we're doing on hazards mitigation. You know, we just passed the 50th anniversary of the great earthquake. In 88, the Alaska Earthquake Center was established to analyze and archive seismic data, really to try to help us move into the ability to better forecast and understand the impacts of earthquakes, tsunamis, volcanic eruptions. And so we operate a 24/7 monitoring network tracking all earthquake activity in partnership with Alyeska, with the Energy Authority, with the Tsunami Warning Center, the Volcano Observatory, and USGS. And right now installing a massive but unfortunately temporary earthquake monitoring network NSF has funded called EarthScope. Other states have installed EarthScope, or NSF has installed, and then the states try to buy it rather than taking the equipment out at the end. We sure picked a bad year, because it's a hard year to go to the legislature and ask to buy a federal system. So I'm afraid this one's going to go by the wayside. The other is the Alaska Volcano Observatory, trying to better understand how volcanoes work, how we can live safely around them, how we can warn people better. And this is one area where we've taken the forecasting ability that we developed, understanding air dispersion of volcanic ash, much of which came out of the KLM incident here in Anchorage. We now have a new startup company started by several of our faculty that is marketing volcanic ash predicting services around the world, and a strong interest to both the airline industry and especially to the insurance industry.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor Brian Rogers. He spoke about the challenges facing the University of Alaska system and the importance of UAF's research and education mission. This talk was recorded at the Egan Center on February 9th and was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce as part of their Make It Monday luncheon series.
This shows the research vessel Sikuliak, funded by the National Science Foundation, part of the fleet. I'm happy to say our ship came in this weekend. And if any of you have young people who are interested in sciences, fisheries, oceanographic, get down to Seward and get on this ship. I was on, early in the construction of this, I was on the plywood mock-up that they did of the labs and the bridge, and it's really an exciting research platform. The ocean class, it's designed to be able to go through up to 2.5 feet of new ice, designed for the Arctic Ocean and Bering Sea, but really with the communications capability and the scientific capability, the best ship in the U.S. research fleet. We're really excited about this. It's been a long time coming. The first proposal for what was then proposed as an icebreaker was written by Bob Elsner in 1973, and it took us a while to get full funding. I'm so glad we finally got that, and it's built and operating. One of the other areas we've been doing some work is in ocean acidification, a key issue for Alaska, one of great concern to all of our coastal communities. We established the Ocean Acidification Research Center in 2010, got special legislative appropriation for it, supporting a network of buoys around the state so that we can understand what's happening and really understand changing conditions, which will be a significant impact on Alaska's fisheries. Now, part of how we work ourselves out of that horrible graph I showed you at the beginning of oil prices is how do we grow Alaska's economy, and how do you use a university to help grow that economy? And I'd like to give a few examples of what UAF is doing that we think can make a difference. First is our Center for Energy and Power, a new research center we started 7 years ago, really focused very much at the applications end, working with communities, working with entrepreneurs, training engineers in renewable energy technologies, in storage technologies, a very multidisciplinary center, works closely with the Institute of Social and Economic Research here in Anchorage to sort of balance the technology with the economics. The picture here shows staff with Oceana Energy. They're working with the ASEP staff to test a turbine generating electricity from the current of the Tanana River near Nenana. And we're working on performance testing. There are now four different turbines around Alaska that we're trying to look at how to harness in-river hydro. Another area that we're really world-leading is in how you connect renewable resources to microgrids. Now, microgrids are grids in a small community, and we have them in every village in Alaska. In fact, about 15% of what would be considered microgrids in the world are here in Alaska. And that business of microgrids is expected to grow to be a $40 billion business over the next decade. So our thinking is working with Alaska partners in the private sector, we can grow an industry in supporting those microgrids throughout the developing world. And in fact, there's a major conference, the World Conference on Microgrids, is here in Anchorage next month. The only high-latitude rocket range in the U.S., the only university with a rocket range, Poker Flat Research Range in Fairbanks, launches to the north. It does not launch orbital science rockets, but rather suborbital to gather scientific data. We launched four sounding rockets on January 26th to try to better understand turbulence in the upper atmosphere. The next day, launched one to measure the aurora, working with teams from Clemson State, Utah State, and you know, the ability to launch rockets and have it perform at 40 degrees below zero is a challenge for all, but we've learned how to address that one. But in addition to the sounding rockets, the Poker Flat provides a satellite downlink facility and a growing fleet of unmanned aircraft. In fact, the largest academic fleet in the world of unmanned aircraft. And we've been doing unmanned aircraft for well over a decade. We're one of only six FAA test sites in the nation, really working on how you integrate unmanned aircraft into the civilian airspace. And so our testing facility is the largest of its kind in North America. Our reach goes around the globe. I was in Iceland this fall when we opened our UAF office in Keflavik Airport outside Reykjavik, doing some testing there that we can't get FAA. If we can't get FAA permission to test in Alaska, we then go to the Iceland government and we get permission working with UAS Iceland on testing over there. We did work that I think has really helped Shell and BP in terms of offshore work in Alaska. When Nome ran out of fuel a few years ago and we had to get an icebreaker into Nome, we were flying to tell the icebreaker where the ice was thinnest so that we could get it there more rapidly. Now, we don't build them. We don't see that as a university role. What we're interested in is the systems integration. How do we develop systems and new ways of using unmanned aircraft? So we're doing the research, the test and evaluation. And I think, you know, we have partners from all over the state and all over the country. This just shows some of the more than 50 partners we're working with right now in Anchorage, in Matsu, and around the world. And the kinds of applications boggles my mind. We've got we're testing in Iceland a Spanish company's aircraft that is designed for firefighting to scoop up water and drop it on fires with unmanned aircraft to reduce the danger of flying. The most interesting one, one of the companies in Netherlands, we're working with them on what was sort of almost a mobile ambulance. It would bring defibrillators to the site of a heart attack more rapidly than you could possibly get an ambulance there. And so just looking at the kinds of companies and interests that are involved, we see this as a great business for Alaska and for the entire state of Alaska. Oil spill research, we've been working on trying to get technologies that can help address what happens when you have an oil spill. How do you predict where it is, where it's going to be? How do you support the industry in responding to oil spills? And we look at the technologies we developed in terms of satellite, in terms of unmanned aircraft, field-based radar, underwater gliders, all being part of understanding and responding should there be a spill. This actually is a demonstration, a simulated small spill in the Chukchi Sea using dye to test technologies and web-based GIS tools so that we can look at how you predict where things might be so you can get response equipment to the right place. In oil and gas development, we're really working at the legislature's request on hydrocarbon optimization. How do we apply that research? How do we work on issues like permitting, ice formation and taps, ice road pad construction, all the things that support the development of that industry. Finally, on the technology side is the commercialization of technology. This shows the work of our Office of Intellectual Property and Commercialization, which we started 4 years ago. 4 years ago, we had 6 disclosures. Last year, 75 disclosures. More than 40 of the technologies were licensed last year. We gave our first royalty check to UAF faculty last year. And I mentioned earlier VIADAPT, the volcanic ash modeling company. We've got another one that's doing work with unmanned aircraft, a couple of others in the pipeline. And I think we'll see that, you know, both from UAA and from UAF, the commercialization of technology is part of how you help diversify the state's economy. Secretary of the Navy Ray Mabus came to Fairbanks last fall to be briefed on Arctic issues. As we move into the U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council, there's more and more interest in understanding Arctic issues and understanding how science can inform public policy. So we've had visits from NATO, from Admiral Papp, who's the U.S. Arctic Council member. Lots of opportunities to try to spread Alaska knowledge to the lower 48, where we know they need it. Finally, this is a picture of the Tulik Lake. I mentioned that earlier. It's one of our research centers. We hold the 29 acres there that is a research support camp for research that goes out into about 156,000 acres of land on the North Slope. A wide variety of researchers. We operate that on behalf of the National Science Foundation. And this was on the cover of the Arctic Research Policy Commission's report that was just issued, a major site for international and scientific research. And we've seen that the commission has recognized the need for demand for educational resources, a skilled workforce, and new research in the Arctic. As we look forward with falling oil production, with oil price changes, we know that as a university we're going to have to do things a little bit differently. And so this shows the addition to the UAF Wood Center. This is a dining facility we opened in August, done with a public-private partnership. No state dollars went into the construction of this dining facility that serves as the dining facility for all of our students, and way more faculty and staff than used to go to the old dining facility. And we think using the public-private partnership model is one of the ways that we can address facility needs at the university in a time of declining state resources. The other is with private support. This shows the site of our planned Indigenous Studies Center, Trothiata Park, really in the heart of the campus. Alaska Natives are 21% of the entering freshmen in our baccalaureate programs at UAF, and we really see this as a signature facility for the University of Alaska Fairbanks and a destination for scholars in Indigenous studies. And actually, I really appreciate that we have significant private support there. Aaron Schutt, the president of Doyon Limited, Tom Barrett, the president of Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, co-chairing with Miranda Wright from the Department of Alaska Native and Rural Development, co-chairing the fundraising for that. We have the architect who designed the National Museum of the American Indian as the lead on this project. We also know we have to start new programs, and one of the really exciting ones has been in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. the Bachelor of Emergency Management program completely online, our fastest growing baccalaureate program. We're getting set to go to the Board of Regents with a proposal for a master's program as well. That this program ranked second in the nation in affordability, fifth in the nation in quality. And we know that each of our universities needs to continue to look at what programs do we need to start up, which ones do we need to let go. Vet Med, I mentioned earlier, working with Colorado State University. They won't get degrees from us. We won't have that as a degree program, but again, we will see Alaskans becoming veterinarians for both private sector and for the public sector as a result of that program. Now, many of the photos that you've seen today show students in the lab, students in the field. One of the things that excites me most about UAF is the ability for students to be involved in research in a way that is unlike most universities in the country. We have if you look at UAS size of the student body versus size of the research program, the ability for students to get involved because there's so much research going on is far different from most universities in the country. So as we gear up for the real centennial of the university, I mentioned 2015 was the authorization. The territory didn't accept the authorization until 2017. So that's our official starting date. We're going to be gearing up for that. At the same time, we know we're going to be a smaller university by 2017, given the challenges of the budget. And ultimately, the budgets are about what is it we value as an institution, what is it we value as a state. I'm really appreciative that Governor Walker and the legislators have recognized the value of higher education. His budget makes the smallest reductions in education, both at the K-12 and higher ed level. And so I think that, with that recognition that there is support, with support from the business community and others for the value that we bring as three institutions, one system to this state, I think we'll make it through these tough times. Thank you.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor Brian Rogers. He spoke about the challenges facing the University of Alaska system and the importance of UAF's research and education mission. This talk was recorded at the Egan Center on February 9th and was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce as part of their Make It Monday luncheon series. Thanks for tuning in with us today for Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.